I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and this is Curious Mix. Listen in as we meet the people and explore the places and programs celebrating the arts and culture in our communities. Keep your ears open for these sounds and the stories behind them. The Harrison Center on the Indianapolis Near Northeast Side is home to over 30 artists with working studios in the building. The center also invites visiting artists and musicians to do residencies of different lengths, including 48 hours. That's how I met a young Tennessee musician who had 2 days to create a song about the 16th Street neighborhood near the center.
My name is Chad Carolyn. I'm a musician who goes by the name Dirty Blonde from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
This wasn't Chad's first visit to Indianapolis or the first time he had worked on a project for the Harrison Center.
I did a residency here, writing songs, doing one song a week for 10 weeks several years ago right after college. And so this is fun to come back and do that in a shorter amount of time, 48 hours. I do a lot of electronic production. I studied jazz guitar in college. I play, you know, a little bit of drums, bass, sing. Storytelling through sound is kind of my passion. So this is kind of a great project to marry the two.
This project is a song about the past, present, and future of the East 16th Street area near the Monon Trail. The Polk Sanitary Milk Company provided jobs and milk to nearby families for decades before being demolished in the late 1960s. A few remaining buildings on the property are being converted to apartments and businesses. Harrison Center Executive Director Joanna Taft says the neighborhood welcomes the rebirth, but wants to see the history, architecture, and the strong sense of community remain. Joanna drove me and Chad to the area so he could get a feel for it.
So I'm turning right by Tinker House, which is where the new coffee shop provider is. But I'm going to go down the block a little bit. I'm on Lewis Street. If you look up to my left, you can see the stables for the Polk Sanitary Milk Company. So this is actually where the horses were when they'd go out and deliver, make milk deliveries. And that building that we talked about with the milk bottles, that was actually here at the corner of 15th and Polk. And so when IPS took over the Polk complex for their facilities and maintenance division, that building wasn't needed anymore, so it was torn down. It's now a parking lot. So I'm going to park at Provider, and we'll go in and get some coffee, and then maybe we can walk down and look at this facade of the old stables. I'll treat, because I had a pistachio latte when I was here last time. That was crazy amazing.
We took our coffee and walked over to Lewis Street to take a look at what's left of the Polk building, the old brick horse stables.
Yeah, I love the look of, like, really old brick buildings where it's like some of the bricks have almost lost their texture from the weathering, but they're still sturdy and they do their job, but they've just been there so long.
Songwriting is storytelling, and you're going to be able to create whatever story you want from this.
Yeah, and I think that's the idea behind this whole area as well is, you know, the Polk building got torn down. The milk bottles aren't there. You know, you can't control the past, but you can help guide the path for the future, you know, which is what everyone's trying to do here with the revitalization, build something new together, repurpose older things, which, yeah, it's kind of the same with songwriting. The story is always told by the winner, like, oh, who won that battle? Well, you know, whoever's telling the story, you know? So I think by even just trying to piece together a narrative or, you know, story for places, it's taking ownership of that, becoming the winners of it in a way.
normally when you write music mm-hmm. and write a song, how long of a process is that? Is it more than 48 hours?
Yeah, I have songs that I'm finishing right now that I've been working on for 3 years. Yeah, this is definitely a much more intensive period of time to work on a project. This is not my normal workflow at all.
But is it exciting or scary?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the best part of, like, working on a new... working on a song at all for me is, like, the first, you know, 4 or 5 hours where you just create. So it's kind of getting to do a whole project, you know, is, like, just the shotgun run all the way through, you know. It's very exciting, very fun, yeah.
I came back to the Harrison Center the next day and caught up with Chad, who was in the closet-sized recording studio putting the finishing touches on the song.
From the time you came back here, what did you do next?
I just sat out there in the City Gallery for a little bit and sort of writing lyrics as I went. And, so like I said, I kind of like that idea of, like, they still, instead of, you know, a dairy, there's a coffee shop there now, you know, but they're still, like, serving milk and stuff. So I kind of went with that idea of, like, kind of repurposing things for more, up-to-date, you know, what's necessary now. And so kind of went off that, and then I was able to, kind of in the refrain there, I wanted to talk about, you know, like, the old and new stuff back-to-back. You always come out ahead, and that was the slogan for Polk's milk, I guess, was always ahead. Polk's milk was always ahead, so I was able to work that in there. And growing from the planted seeds, learning to provide what you need, kind of a little shout-out to Provider, the coffee shop that's there now. And then I got in here and started banging away on the keyboard, and I wanted to kind of do some sort of keys, like hits sound. So that's where it started, with just that boom, boom. These are the keys I started with, I was telling you about, and it's all just this big, you know, digitally modeled synthesizer, you know, that I played on here, but all the sound is actually happening in the computer. And then I added the drums and the bass line to that. Probably can't hear the bass line on there. And then added the guitars. After that, I've been listening to a lot of Barbara Streisand recently, kind of from the early 80s, and I liked that. That sort of clean, kind of 80s pop guitar, I kind of want to bring that in, that kind of style. Yeah, and then once I added that, that's kind of everything I did yesterday, and I had the vocal melody planned out in my head, and then once I got back in today, I added some of the extra synthesizer parts, and then just some little effects, you know, like some rise effects to help transitions. Solidified the arrangement, because I just had, you know, a couple repeats of that, so I actually moved it around and put different stuff at different parts, and then I just recorded the vocals probably an hour before you got here.
Still so.
There are things I would like to have fleshed out more and maybe, like, worked a little harder getting those exact sounds on synthesizer patches and whatnot. that's about the only downside. I mean, you just have to plan around it. Like, for the song, you know, I knew it would have to be, like, a pretty minimal arrangement. It's just about 3 minutes long, you know, a nice little single. So, I mean, you just have to plan around that, you know. And luckily, I've, you know, made enough songs from start writing and, you know, recording, arranging, mixing, and everything at this point that I know what to dedicate the most time to. So I was able to balance it out pretty well throughout the process, I think, as far as time management goes.
But I mean, obviously, The Neighborhood's going to get this really nice song. I mean, you've done a lovely job of incorporating in the words. The story is perfect. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that it is. I was envisioning the video in my head as I was listening to it, of, you know, all the places that we visited yesterday and how all those pictures of the way it was and the way it is now could be incorporated. And it is, it's that kind of, it's very inviting, but it's still got those points of up-tempo that you can't just lay back completely. You got to keep picking it up a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they're going to get this beautiful song. But for you, what do you take away from this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, in a situation like this, there's always a lot of technical benefits of, you know, knowing how fast you can do something and ways to get things done efficiently. I also think, it's a really fun song to make, and I've, you know, enjoyed listening to it while I've been working on it. I'm excited to, you know, listen to it more once it's actually finished. I think it's a song that wouldn't exist unless I came here to make it, which is pretty cool. So I'm glad I got the experience to do that. But I definitely hope, you know, people hear it and enjoy it and get a lot out of it musically and, you know, lyrically and in the context of The Neighborhood.
Just the scratch track from Chad's computer that I recorded through the headphones as I listened to it that afternoon. You can hear the final version and more of Chad's work on the Harrison Center website. And you can see pictures of the Polk Dairy, including the huge milk bottles that were part of the original exterior of the building, on the Historic Indianapolis website.
Really, really nice.
Thank you.
Each week, we bring you Making It, audio postcards from DIY artists making it in Indiana. This week, WFYI's Melissa Davis speaks with a self-taught drummer. He started as a young teen in Plymouth, Indiana, moved to Indianapolis in junior high, and now in his 30s, he drums for indie rock band Brother O' Brother.
Hi, I'm Warner Swopes, and I make beats.
Why is making beats your preferred medium?
I say that because there are a lot of more maybe technical and talented drummers maybe in Indianapolis, especially like a lot of my friends are super, super good at drums and really rehearsed and tight. I'm real self-taught and real kind of loosey-goosey in my methods. I just like to bring a fat beat to the music.
I'm in love with you, baby, like a monster truck.
How do you come up with a beat?
I normally just listen to whatever the guitar riff is and try to find something that accentuates what the guitar is doing, but also is unique and different from anything else I've heard. There's always beats rolling around in my head, like throughout my day to day. Just anything that makes any kind of noise, I try to pick up on that rhythm and see what I could add to it. I carry my drumsticks around a lot, especially when we're out about, you know, touring and stuff. I'll carry them with me throughout the day and just kind of hit them on whatever's available, you know, things in the van, dashboards, stuff like that, and just kind of get a feel for what feels right or sounds like it might be a cool thing. But you don't really know until you get it actually on the drums and with the other music. You know, there's only so many drum beats that can be in existence. I'm always just trying to find some unique, different take to it, you know?
How does Indianapolis factor into your art?
For me, Indianapolis has always kind of been my home base. So when my family moved here, when I was in, like, middle school, it just felt like the right place to be. And the people here, it's just so much more friendship here than it is in other parts of the country. You get out and you see a lot of bands who are trying to compete with each other, but here it's more like we're trying to help each other out. And not to get all sappy, but it's just like all of the drummers in this area are all really cool with each other and, you know, very complimentary of each other. And I think that's just a lot of fun. And it makes the process of making music and playing with different bands more fun that way.
What makes you keep going with your art?
I keep going with my art mostly just because I enjoy what I do, and also because I have two pretty young kids. A lot of times people are like, well, isn't it kind of a bummer to travel and be away from your family and stuff? And it is. It definitely is. But part of it is I want to show my kids that if you want to be successful at something, or you have a passion or a dream to do something, that you just keep doing it and you work at it. Because I think if I were just to be like, well, I guess I'm going to give it up and stay home, that doesn't really show them that you've got to work for, you know, the things that you want to do. I'm definitely seeing that in my son right now. He's 5 and he's starting to take on those attributes of like, you got to keep doing it if you're going to do something and be passionate about it. Sometimes it's not easy, but you got to just keep pushing. I guess I would just say if you want to learn how to play drums, lessons are definitely a good way to go. But if you feel like you can't, for whatever reason, take lessons, just get a hold of some drums. Drums is something I feel like if the passion is there, you can be good at it.
Just ahead on Curious Mix, a watershed moment.
It's something I don't think I never would imagine myself writing, so it was really cool to hear the outcome.
And a street fighting man.
Tagging is all about getting your name out as many places as possible. Graffiti is all about getting large, big, and holy crap, how did they do that out of it?
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. Most of the time we talk about all things new when we chat with Matt Soucy, the host of Blues House Party and Film Sociology. But this week we're going to talk about something a little bit old. Matt, not you, not me,
Wow. But
something else.
If you're old, I'm ancient. So, well, as you know, when I do my thing on Saturday nights, I often start the show with you're going to hear something old and something new. And I love to do that. I love highlighting new artists, but I even get more excited when I highlight Indiana recordings or Indiana history, Indiana artists. Of course, we've had people like Yank Rochelle, Scrapper Blackwell, Leroy Carr, who lived in Indianapolis. But I brought for you today a recording that happened in Richmond, Indiana, back in 1929.
Holy cow.
Yeah, this was at the old Jeanette Records and the Star Piano Factory. There's one building that's still up in the gorge, but there were a slew of recordings that happened in Richmond. Of course, probably the most famous recording is Hoagy Carmichael recording Stardust, but people like Hank Williams, Louis Armstrong, and as I've highlighted on the show, on my show before, a slew of blues and jazz artists. So I brought for you from June 14th, 1929, on vocals and guitar, this is Charlie Patton and Tom Russian Blues.
So tell us a little bit about who was Charlie Patton.
Charlie Patton was one of the kind of the groundbreakers of acoustic blues in the first half of the 20th century. An Indiana artist we all know and love, the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. This is one of his big influences. In fact, the Rev did an entire Charlie Patton album of covers a few years ago.
This record's a different kind of record. You know, it's very stripped down. It's recorded one microphone. And it's, of course, a collection of Charlie Patton songs. And Charlie Patton was basically the first real star of, I guess what you would say, American low culture music. You know, before there was the only real records that sold and sold like crazy were going to be like pop records, you know, which would have been like big band stuff, classical music, things like that. He had been all around the United States playing. He drove a brand new car. He played a brand new Gibson guitar, which none of them guys did. They all played Kalamazoos and harmonies and things like that. He had done all that and died by the time Robert Johnson ever recorded a note. 2 years before he died, before Robert Johnson ever recorded. And a lot of Robert Johnson songs are kind of covers of Charlie Patton songs, songs he did. And, you know, he did that all the while being someone who was, he was black, white, and Indian, right? Which in Mississippi in the 20s and 30s made him a black man. And so he was able to do all that, you know, and at that time, you know, under that oppressive situation. It's pretty amazing, you know, maybe one of the most amazing stories in all of American history, not just music.
A lot of people know about Robert Johnson, but they should know people like Charlie Patton and Booker White and Son House. Those players, they're just as influential.
And why would he have come to Jeanette Records to record there?
Richmond was a destination for ships to drop off their wares, and it was not quite the crossroads of Indianapolis, but it was a crossroads as far as ships and trains, and it was a little hub of a music scene because of the recording studio and the piano factory. In Richmond, currently in the gorge where the last building remains, there is a sidewalk of fame of some of the people that have recorded there: blues, country, gospel, bluegrass.
At the Star Piano Factory now, they're reusing that area?
Yes. There's a group, the Richmond Shakespeare Festival. They do those. It's the brick building is open. There's no windows. There is a rooftop, so it feels like you're doing Shakespeare in the Park, but you have a roof in case the weather gets a little, you know, dicey. But yeah, they've done those the last several years. And I know there have been music festivals. I've actually attended a wedding inside this factory space. It's a really nice space, and I'm glad it's getting utilized.
Something for us to listen to and to go see, too. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Sound Expeditions is an audio soundtrack of Indianapolis, created by local arts enthusiast Michael Kaufman. He asked a variety of musicians to interpret a part of the city using original music and natural sound. Curious Mix contributor Kyle Long introduces us to Indianapolis composer and vocalist Hannah Benn, who focused on the White River near Kentucky Avenue.
I'm Hannah Benn, and my piece for Sound Expeditions is the White River. ¶¶
My piece was The White River. It's titled The White River, about the White River, which, and the location that I focused on was Kentucky Avenue. Four site visits, Four Seasons. And I picked up the different biophony and whatever's had a couple microphones and picked up sounds. I slowed down the sounds, a lot of cricket sounds. I focused on these crickets. So I slowed down the recordings, and I was able to dictate certain rhythms, and then that was my inspiration. Timbre of the instruments that I chose harmonicas, quite a few, so you'll hear like a bass harmonica and strings. So the string part, there's a highlight on the violin, and the violin is playing these kind of glassy tones via certain techniques to sound like insects as well. And jaw harps are also in there. It sounds like toads. And then the piano is also reflecting this rhythm that the insects around the area are doing, which I think are mostly crickets. Piece from that perspective, and this was totally inspired by the atmosphere, so I felt like it had this really honest nature to it. It's something I don't think I never would imagine myself writing, so it was really cool to hear the outcome. And actually, after this piece, I think I sometimes write things differently. It gave me like a different approach. I'm more interested in experimenting that way and being in touch with my environment. And it's sort of romantic to pick up on your surroundings and be in touch like that. It's kind of 4D, you know, like 4D sense. Really love it.
Kyle Long hosts Cultural Manifesto, a weekly look into the history, harmony, and humanity of Indiana music. Listen live on 90.1 or online Wednesday nights at 8 and Saturday nights at 10. How does a poem inspire a visual artist? Like this. Here's Curious Mix contributor Terry Border.
Last year, my wife and I went to Tokyo and to Seoul, Korea for a while. We were there for a month, and we came back really affected by the culture. Loved it, but didn't have that in mind when we were building a deck this year. And we gave the plans to our builder, and we gave him a couple of instructions. And what ended up happening, he built us a deck that looks kind of like an Asian kind of a cabana. And we had him build a koi pond in front of it. I recently bought a pair of koi. And it's so fun to go out there in the morning and see what they're doing and see if they've lived through the night and not been eaten by a raccoon. That's always a plus. But so I thought, well, you know, I wonder if there's a poem about a koi out there that would interest me. And maybe I could read. So I did find this poem. It's from his collection called Scale by Nathan McLean. And it's called Love Elegy in the Chinese Garden with Koi. Near the entrance, a patch of tall grass, near the tall grass, long-stemmed plants. Each bending an ear-shaped cone to the pond surface. If you looked closely, you could make out silvery koi, swishing toward the clouded pond's edge, where a boy tugs at his mother's shirt for a quarter to buy fish feed. And watching that boy as he knelt down to let the koi kiss his palms, I missed what it was to be so dumb as those koi. I like to think they're pure, that that's why even after the boy's palms were empty, after he had nothing else to give, they still kissed his hands, because who hasn't done that, loved so intently, even after everything is gone? Love something that has washed its hands of you? I like to think I'm different now, that I'm enlightened somehow. But who am I kidding? I know I'm like those koi still, with their popping mouths, that would kiss those hands again if given the chance. So dumb.
And we remember that you did a poem about an aquarium, and you had an aquarium at one time, and we asked if you'd have another one, and I believe your answer was...
I can't remember what I said. Did I say I wanted a koi pond?
You did. You going to get another aquarium?
I think we're going to have to at some point, something smaller. I had a really big one. Or also, we're thinking about a koi pond, maybe. Maybe that'll be a little easier. We hadn't planned it yet. And I don't know, something about watching fish, I guess. I don't know. But it is a relaxing thing.
Have you named them yet?
No, I have learned not to name our fish because as soon as we name our fish, I'm telling you, it's like the next day, they are gone. We bought four goldfish along with a koi, and we named one of them, and he was gone the next day. we have one frog out there, and I believe the frog ate him because... we witnessed the frog eating one of the other fish.
Ooh.
I came out there in the morning to throw some fish food, and little did I know that the frog was hiding in the stones right beneath my feet. And as I dropped the food in, the fish came up to the surface. The frog jumped in and grabbed the fish as he was grabbing food.
And I bet he didn't even thank you.
He did not. He did not. He swam around with this this goldfish sticking out of his mouth for about 5 minutes, but I couldn't catch him, so I've made peace. You know, it's just the circle of life.
That's Terry Border. He'll be back again next week with another poem for us to digest. Just ahead on Curious Mix, manners, please.
Some people, they try. Some people do not like to use their hands. I understand that we are still working on them.
And the Magical Mystery Tour. Well, sort of.
We're not even on the bus yet. Yeah. Waiting for the bus.
I want it to be like rainbow colors. Well, especially blue.
I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. I'm Jill Dittmeyer, and you're listening to Curious Mix. It's time to perk up our palates with a little help from Yelp, the online community of ordinary eaters who know where to find the tastiest places in town, especially when it comes to ethnic eats. One of their favorite places for vegetarian and vegan food is Aksum Ethiopian.
My name is Ephraim Alomayo. I own Aksum Ethiopian restaurant. We call it shiro. It's a chicken piece. It comes from Ethiopia. It's very, very popular in Ethiopia. It's homemade, everything's homemade from back home. So I guess our customers, they love it, and then we are excited to serve for our customers too. The ingredient in it is garlic, ginger, some cardamom, and I don't know what's in English to call it, but it's in Ethiopia, there's a lot of, has like dry red onions, and there's also some Ethiopian spices. I cannot describe in English, sorry. First, we put the onion oil and light tomato, fresh light tomato, and light spicy powder, and let it cook for a while, a little bit, and then you put hot water. After you put hot water, you put the chicken pieces, which is a shiro. You put it mixed up very well. You put fresh ginger and fresh garlic on it. And then you let it stay for a couple hours. And then you taste the salt. Taste it so yummy. And then let it ready to serve. Well, we serve it with, we call it injera. It's like bread, the bread, like it looks like tortillas, very soft. We make it here too from scratch. We try hard to teach people how to eat because most people, they use fork or something, spoon. Some people, they try. Some people do not like to use their hands. I understand that we are still working on them. But eventually, maybe in future, maybe we're going to ban fork and not to use. We were closing for 5 months for a new renovation. Everybody kind of angry because we was too late to reopen it. And then when we opened it, they told me we have the best vegan in town, which is make us happy. We make us like to make more, getting better and better.
Aksum Ethiopian is located at 825 North Pennsylvania Street in downtown Indianapolis. There are a lot of different things kids learn at camp. Most are planned, like team building and getting along, but sometimes the best lessons just happen. Let's join Curious Mix contributor Carter Barrett as she and a group of campers head to a sustainable farm to learn about climate change.
Mackenzie, Charlie, Ayush,
Anna,
Benny.
We start walking to the downtown transit center in 5 to 7 minutes.
Walking!
Bring your lunch, bring your water.
Here the counselors are organizing campers. Each group will take a bus from the downtown transit center to a different urban farm. Climate Camp was started by local eco-activist Jim Poyser with the goal of educating kids about climate change and being better leaders and advocates. 35 kids are enrolled in the camp's first week.
What trip are you going on? Do you know? What trip are you going on? You don't remember? You're with the Eco Fabulettes, aren't you?
The group I'm with heads towards the downtown transit center in what becomes an impromptu lesson on public transit. We missed the bus.
Yeah.
I didn't get on the bus. We're not even on the bus yet. We're waiting for the bus.
I want it to be blue. I want it to be like rainbow colors, especially blue.
1 hour later, the campers boarded a non-rainbow colored bus on the way to Indy Urban Acres. For the next 40 minutes, the campers entertain themselves on iPads and doodling in notebooks.
You guys are at Indy Urban Acres,
and I heard you guys were from the climate camp.
Yep.
We grow a bunch of produce. We grow a bunch of fruits and vegetables. Where do you think it goes?
I don't know.
No idea.
The answer is it goes to food pantries. There's a lot of people in Indianapolis that are hungry, kids your age, and so we grow food and we give it all away to food pantries and to families that need it.
We have pandas.
Pandas?
Yeah. She loves pandas.
Pandas have a hard time living outside of China. So what kind of things do we want to think about when we're on a farm that have to do with climate?
No pesticides, no chemicals to make the animals fatter for more milk.
I love that. No pesticides, no chemicals.
Yeah. If you're standing in the center of Indy Urban Acres, on your left is the highway. You can't really see it, but you can definitely hear it. On the other is rows and rows of vegetables, from kale and collard greens to tomatoes.
All this space here, we grow 30,000 pounds, and that probably serves about 5,000 or 7,000 families. Really something what you can do with a small piece of land.
And then there's a few picnic tables with a chicken coop, and the campers sit down to eat lunch.
Hi, my name is Berlin/Panda Girl.
Berlin von Rutenberg is 6 years old.
What's been your favorite part of today?
Being here, just seeing the chickens and feeding them and seeing the caterpillars. There's just so much to say.
Well, do you remember what that guy said? And he said they grow food here for the hungry people?
Yeah, and the hungry people should care about it too.
So do you think people who aren't hungry should care for people who are?
I hope that they do, because they could be one of your friends, or you can meet one of them and they can be your friend, and then you might care about it.
After a day in the sun, picking caterpillars off collard greens and feeding the chickens, the campers rallied at the bus stop with pockets full of green beans and tomatoes.
So right now they're green, but of course they're going to become... Oh, look at that one.
Red?
Wow.
Is it a red one?
Yep. Oh, they're all a little bit red.
For Curious Mix, I'm Carter Barrett.
Oh, it's on the radio. Hello! Oh, wait. If my mom hears this, tell my mom. Well, when this gets in, hi, Mom. How are you doing? I love you. Bye.
Most of the time, people are happy to see graffiti fade away from a public wall, but that's not the case for a mural at 9th and Keeling Streets on the Indianapolis Near Northeast Side. Curious Mix contributor Joy Hernandez spent time with a local artist working to restore that outdoor art.
It's an old train viaduct at 9th and Keeling. Originally built in 1926, today cars drive over the questionably patched street, mostly ignoring the once stately constructed concrete archways in their quest for Sherman Road. Worn out tires, discarded bottles, even a forgotten Bible lay scattered on the roadside. It's not the prettiest place in Indianapolis, nor is it the safest. Lisa Bowles wants to change that.
Crime prevention through environmental design says that through research they found that if people are looking on a street, then there's going to be less crime. If you're not hidden, then there's going to be less criminal activity, and that's why there's lights and not hiding things behind bushes and trees. If there's not litter already there, then there's less likely to be more litter put down.
In 2015, Bowles and her Rivoli Park neighbors commissioned a mural to line the viaduct. Tucked into those concrete archways, colorful circles representing seven dimensions lifted spirits. But then taggers struck.
With the mural design, they found that even having pictures of people or faces deters criminal activity. It makes people feel like people are there and also taking care of the area.
Tagging is all about getting your name out as many places as possible. Graffiti is all about getting large, big, and holy crap, how do they do that out of it?
Bowles brought in Easy Kiosk, a local hip-hop artist, to revitalize the revitalization.
So when it comes to tags, they don't generally care. They're kind of just tagging stuff. And when it comes to graffiti, graffiti is an art form. So a lot of people who respect the art form will not go and tag onto the piece. They won't. A lot of the younger generation, they might not understand the value behind not doing it.
They're calling the project American 3.14 and considered an upgrade, like the computer term, building on previous neighborhood efforts.
We really can't recreate what was there because, it was a complete vision, and it's not complete anymore.
It was time to try new tactics, and Easy's method of work translated well to the challenges a mural would face in this location.
He is going to create these stencils, and the stencils can be used over and over again to put the art back up. So if it gets covered with graffiti, we can just put the art right back up without too much effort.
Oh, I keep this out.
Easy has spent months squeaking through markers, coloring in various portions of line-drawn people. Each image requires multiple stencils, for each color is a different layer. All of the images are real-life, local people.
The models are friends who trusted me enough to stand in front of a camera. Like when you capture somebody in front of the camera, it's to capture who they are. And I think it's really awesome to then turn that camera around and show them that they're great and that they are worth a thousand words.
Easy's enthusiasm is endless, leading TeenWorks volunteers through the initial installation process. The volunteers helped Easy continue the stencil preparations, this time in the Inglewood Christian Church.
Not again!
They taped together printed pages, reassembling the stencils.
You can't finish that off. Finish that off.
Back out at 9th and Keeling, they break out cans of Montana aerosol paint and construct geometric patterns to cover the tags. Then the human element begins to appear.
All right, move it. We'll see what we've got.
The whole thing?
Yep.
Easy hopes the experience stays with his young helpers, teaches them about art, and how they can use it to inspire change.
I'm hoping it not only inspires the younger generation not to think of this as, not as an act of, hey, I really don't care about life, I just want to put something on a wall, and more along the lines of, I'm trying to speak to someone, but nobody's listening. Tagging is vandalism, but graffiti is not. Graffiti is just a young art form that has been pulled and pushed mainly because it has no edge to it. There's no stop to it. You can do wheat pasting, you can do stencils, you can do freehand. Your genre of art doesn't stop with just letters or words, but images as well. So if you took all the art you've ever done and literally giving it out to public like, hey, this is free. This is literally what graffiti is.
Will this upgrade work and last? Easy and Bowles are hopeful that changing the story will help people connect.
We're part of this story, and you're a part of this story, and please respect this area.
I'm pretty sure they're going to look at this piece and say, oh, snap, son, and then kind of like never want to touch that piece because it's just going to be so awesome when I finish. They're going to be like, yeah, I feel like I made this piece. They're going to walk by and say, I feel like I made this. Like, I'm a part of this. And that's going to deter them from wanting to actually do anything on that bridge.
For Curious Mix, I'm Joy Hernandez.
Curious Mix is made possible in part by the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Brandon Meeks composed and performs our music. And this Curious Mix was created by
Roxana Caldwell,
Melissa Davis,
Terry Border,
Matt Pelser,
Joy Hernandez,
Sarah Neil Estes,
Matthew Sosi,
Kyle Long,
and me, Jill Dittmeyer. We'll be back next week with more Curious Mix.